Morning. Today's daf in Tzivos is daf Yud Gimel. We find ourselves on the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, starting with the Mishnah at the very bottom of the Amud. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. The Mishnah now is a continuation of what we've been discussing yesterday, and that is how much the Ksuva is, and more on the discussion of Tainus Pesulim. The Mishnah only until Daf Yud Aleph finally revealed to us how much the base amount for the Ksuva settlement is going to be. For Basul it's 200, for an Alman it's 100. Actually, the truth of the matter is this information was presented on Yoram and Vase. Okay, but still, those are the base amounts, and then we have had over the past couple of days a lot of discussion in the Gemara revolving around at what point exactly is the Ksuva going to get downgraded from a 200 down to a 100, and what if there wasn't disclosure, and Mekach Tos, and some of the more basic discussions in terms of what is necessary disclosure and what happens if there is no disclosure. The Mishnah we did yesterday on Yud Beis Amud Aleph discussed whether or not there's Tainus Besulim in the province of Yehuda, mm-hmm. where the minhag was is that the Arus and the Arusa would spend time together and perhaps and probably had beer with one another. So does he have Tainus Besulim? The answer simply is no. Simple. The Gemara points out Mekomus Yesh. That even in Yehuda, there's not one general minhag, but okay, that's a minhag in Yehuda. We are now back at the Mishnah. We're starting with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. Achas Amana Yisrael, Achas Amana Kohanim Ksuvas Amana. Widow, in terms of widowhood, so it does not matter, says the Mishnah, whether she's a widow who is a Bas Yisrael or a widow who is a Bas Kohen. In both of those circumstances, the Ksuva is going to be a mana. Right? And as you remember, we said a couple days ago, the word almana, the word widow, actually is a derivative of the word mana, meaning it means it's 100. It actually is a reference to the amount that the Ksuva is going to be for her. Even though the Gemara points out, even though that's a rabbinic institution, but the Torah forecasted, the Torah prognosticated into the future and simply knew that the institution of the Chachamim is going to be a mana. It's going to be 100 zuz. So good. So that's the ksuva of an amana. Beis din shokohanim ayigovin lebesul arba meir zuz v'lo mich biyadam. The beis din of the Kohanim would collect for the besul of 400 zuz v'lo mich biyadu Chachamim. The Chachamim didn't protest. They didn't. They had no problem with the. If you will, the inflation of their basulos being 400. Okay, the Tana the Amanas Kohanim Ksuvas Amasayim. Okay, now for simple math, a little bit of prorating. So basically, what do we find when it comes to general amana? General amana. So it's instead of being 200 zuz, or Ksuvas is going to be 100 zuz. Okay, so that's a. Amana gets a 50% reduction, if you will, in terms of Iksuva. So the Gemara points out that we have a Braisa, and in this Braisa, it says that Amanas Kohanim gets 200. Okay. Amanas Kohanim gets 200 and makes perfect sense, meaning that if her base ksuva for the basil is going to be 400, and you then operate with a 50% reduction, so 400 divided by 2 is going to be 200. That makes perfect sense. The problem is, or it's not a problem, but the observation is that doesn't seem to be our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that every Almana gets 100. The Almanas Kohanim, the Almanas Yisrael, every Almana gets 100. So what we seem to have is a disagreement between the Mishnah and the Brisa of the Gemara addresses. So again, let's start from the beginning of the Gemara. Tanav Almana Kohanim Ksuvas Amasayim V'anatanan Achas Almanas Yisrael V'achas Almanas Kohanim Ksuvas Amana. Okay, the Gemara notes the discrepancy. So how much does an Almanas Kohen get? So I'm Rav Ashi, Shtei Tekaras Ayu. So Rav Ashi explains as follows. There actually were two institutions. Originally what happened was is that there was 400, the Besula started at 400 Zuz, and it dropped down to 100. Okay, Kavan de Chazu de Mizazel Behu. Now, what did that do? That created Zilzal. Meaning, think about it. When you are, everything is relative. Everything is dependent on how you frame it. Okay, your local department stores, God bless them. So they tell you that the cost of an item is, $1,000, and then they tell you, but you're going to get it off at, and you're going to get 50% off, and you're going to spend $500 for it. And you're thinking, what a bargain. Unbelievable. Okay, so, right, I'm... I you'll never catch me shopping. It's one of the things I hate. You know, I dislike the most. But the those who are involved in shopping, so they think, wow, they got such a bargain. Yeah, they think it's a bargain because it started off at 1,000 and now it goes down to 500. And God bless them. They you know, everything is how it's framed. So over here, when you're starting is when your starting point is 400 and you go down to 100, so you're thinking to yourself, do you know what just happened? So the you guys just got depreciated. You're now a quarter of what you once was worth. Now again, we're talking about Iksuva. We're not really talking about your real value, but still, think about it. You commanded Iksuva 400. Now you got 100, so you'll be a point of zilzal. Now zilzal, take a look at Rashi. Zilzal meaning what? So Rashi says ba'amanas kalos be'enayim. In other words, it's going to devalue the amana. So be'enayim lo tziam ibnei Iksuva sam muetas takin aluhu masayim dignai hayalehem. So it was just simply it simply looked like you got a discount, you got a bargain, and you're not gonna treat her the way that she needs to be treated. So let's go back to the Gemara. Okay, so therefore what they instituted was, you know what? The Amanas Kohen is gonna be 200. Good, so we'll prorate. Meaning if the starting point's 400, so the Amanas is gonna be 200. Okay, then what happens? Now, with every institution, of course, there's always going to be a backlash. There's a give and there's a take. So here what they said is now that the almana for the Kohen is going to be 200, understandably, so that she's prorated, like a Bas Yisrael would be, that an almana is 50% of the original. But fine, now here's what happens. Now the bachelors, the older bachelors, are looking around and looking to see who are they going to marry. Okay, I hate to think that we're going to mix money and romance, but we are going to mix money and romance. And so we're looking around for eligibility. Look, there's an almana for 200, there's an almana for 100, right? I'm sorry, and if I can get almana for 200, I can also get a basula for 200. And so therefore what's going to end up happening is that the financial figure is going to go through their head and they're going to say to themselves, I'm not going to spend 200 on a ksuva of a bas kohen almana. If I can get a basula, you saw for that kind of money. So kem dechazdu kam afreshim inayu da amar adin nesivanan almanas kohanim nezel nesa basula bas yisrael adrinal mil sayhu. So the Gemara says so. Then the Beis Din Shel Kohanim realized it was a nice idea. It just simply doesn't work. It simply does not pan out. And so subsequently, they move the Almanas Kohen back to 100. So what is our Mishnah? So now everything's cleared up. So our Mishnah reflects the ultimate Takana. The ultimate Takana is to bring it down to 100 so that it's a level playing field. It's like they cap the markets in the professional sports leagues. I don't know if anyone's following that, but that's fine. But they cap it so that everything is a level playing field. So therefore, the Almanas Kohen will be just as available and as valued as an Almanas Bas Yisrael. That's our Mishnah. The Brisa says that she got 200. That reflected an earlier Takana where they tried to make her not feel as devalued, to go from 400 all the way down to 100, so they went from 400 down to 200. Okay, Adkan. We continue in the Gemara on the top of Yud Beis and Beis. Beis and Shekhanim, Amar Rav Yehuda, Mashmol, Lo Beis and Shekhanim, Bavan, Amar Allah, Afilu Mishpachos, Miyachasus, B'Yisrael. This idea that you can inflate the price of the Ksuba is not limited to the Kohanim. It can be done anywhere, anyone who wants to, anyone who feels that they have a legitimate right to inflate the base value could do so. Mishpachos and miuchasos, families that have a good lineage, a fine pedigree, so they could do that as well. So imratzalasos kederek shakonim osim, so they have every right to do so. Meitzvah, the Gemara challenges. Charutzalasos, I'm sorry. Harutzalasos kederek shakonim osim kigon bas yisrael konim bas kon liyisrael osim bas yisrael konim bas kon liyisrael hu di ikatzad kahuna. Sounds like the way the Brisa presents it, there's got to be a kohen in the equation, either a he's got to be from a family of Kohen, she's got to be from a family of a Kohen, of a Bas Yisrael Lo. But it sounds like from the Brisa that if I have nobody involved in this marriage who's part of the Kohanic people, Kohanic tribe, so no, you can't do it. So, Lo Mi Bai Kamar, the Gemara says, no, you misunderstood the Brisa. The style of the Brisa is Lo Mi Bai, meaning it goes without saying. Lo Mi Bai Bas Yisrael Lo Imatzi Amar La Gemara says, look, if Yisrael marries Yisrael, so there it is obvious. If you want to inflate the price, you have every right to inflate the price. But if I have involved in this marriage a Kohen or a Bas Kohen, so maybe the argument could be, look, I wouldn't, don't think about inflating the price. What, look what I'm bringing to the table. I'm a Kohen, right? You're a Bas Kohen. In other words, we're bringing something to the table. I might have thought the Havamina would have been, you can't inflate the price of the Ksuva. Look at the value that I'm bringing here into this marriage. So the Chiddush of the Brice is that, no, even in that case, if you'd like to, you can inflate the value. But we're not, the Brice is not excluding the Yisrael Miyuchasos. They also, if they want to, could inflate. Okay? Having her, I guess Yichus would be the Yichus would probably be the answer. Okay, we start now with the next Mishnah. Okay, and here we begin. Okay, we are in Yud Beis Amud Beis, and we're now up to the next Mishnah. This Mishnah really takes us to the end of the Perek. Okay, in these series of Mishnahs that we're starting right now and continuing well into today and into tomorrow, and one more day after that as well, we have a lot of he said she said. Okay, the in the marriage that we've seen so far, we've just been discussing since the beginning of the parak this idea of Tanis Pesulim. Tanis Pesulim is the idea that she wasn't a Pesula, and he brings her to Basin, and he makes a claim, hey, she wasn't a Pesula. And as of yet in the Mishnayos, we haven't really gotten a response from her, meaning not an explanation from her, what exactly has happened. But right now, his claim is that she's not a Pesula. Up until now, what have we seen in terms of evidence? So we've had basically two forms of evidence. Either number one, he brings in the physical evidence of the bed sheet, of wipes that they used. In other words, he brings in physical evidence that she wasn't a Pesula. Or, as we learned back on Daf Tes, Pesach Pesuch Matzasi. Not physical evidence, but his own sensation and his own feeling regarding the matter. And we spent some time discussing that as well, as being part of his claim of Tanis Pesula. But now in this Mishnah, what we're going to be discussing is that he has a claim and she has a counterclaim. And so these Gemaras always get a little bit tricky in terms of understanding and seeing. When you have claim and counterclaim, right, a towing and a nitan, so it always becomes a bit tricky to try to distill and to sift through who's got the better claim, who's got the stronger claim, and there are going to be a lot of halachic principles floating around in these claims and counterclaims, and so I'll try my best to keep everything straight and so that we can follow exactly what the issues are in these claims and counterclaims. I know it says, Isha v'la matzah l'besulim. Okay, so a man marries a woman and it turns out she was not a Basula. And that's not even open for dispute. They're in agreement that she wasn't a Basula. Here, what is open for dispute is exactly what happens. He marries Mishra Stani Nanasti Menitab Chasadeo. So she says to him that I was violated after our Erisin. And I was already property of yours. I was already your wife. And the Nistab Chasadeo and your field got flooded. It's an expression in the we're going to see a number of times. We've already seen it before. An expression that means that, look, you and I are already committed to each other. We're already more than committed. We already went through Erisin, meaning we're already married. And much like if you have a field and the field gets flooded and you own the field, okay, it's unfortunate, but it's yours. So that's what you got. So here also, meaning I was violated after the Erisin, but we already were married. We already were committed to one another. And it certainly sounds like from the Mishnah, your ksuva obligation is already laid down. Meaning it's you're already beholden to your ksuva obligation, and the stop chasadeo, it's really unfortunate. Why didn't she say this before the actual chuppah itself? Understandable. She was embarrassed. It was humiliating. It was it's tragic. So, but this
is. Didn't tell anybody.
Oh yeah. No, it's which again. That's not meaning. You're right. The point is that she made that claim. And now he formulates his counter argument, which says, no, that this all happened before Erisin. You didn't disclose this information. You should have disclosed this information. And it's now a Mekachtos. And therefore, his counterclaim is that, no, I don't believe you. Okay, now again, in a moment, we're going to evaluate the strength of each one of the claims. Right now, we're just articulating the claims. Rabbi Gamaliel, Rabbi Elazar, Armim Ne'emenes. So Rabbi Gamaliel, together with Rabbi Elazar, says she's believed. Rabbi Yoshua, Armer Lomi Pianu Chayin. And Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, we're not going to live by her mouth. She's in a state of ba'ula. In other words, she had relations, and she's in that state of having had relations. She, in fact, deceived him. And until there's a proof that's brought to the fact of what substantiating what she says, she's not going to be believed. Okay, so on one side, we have Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar, who extends the credibility to her. On the other side, you have Rabbi Yehoshua, who extends the credibility to the husband. And again, the strength of each argument we're going to present in just a moment. But just keep those two positions in line. And they're going to be, those are going to be party lines. Meaning, as we get through the Gemara today, tomorrow, and Tuesday morning, so we're going to see these are the party lines for these particular tanaim. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar are always going to give credibility to her, and Rabbi Yehoshua is going to give credibility to him.
But is Rabbi Yehoshua going to give credibility to him, or putting the burden on her to prove?
Who, Rabbi Yehoshua?
Yeah.
I would say essentially the same point, meaning the default credibility goes to him. If she has a burden of proof. If she doesn't bring it, then she's not getting her ksuva. And if she does, if she can bring other facts, witnesses, or anything like that, so fine. But in other words, but he's believed.
Do they ever make her swear?
We'll get to a shvua momentarily. We're gonna discuss the shvua in just a moment. Okay, so far so good. We have a mishnah, but we don't have much explanation. The facts are laid out in front of us. He makes a claim. She makes a claim. Her claim obviously supports her rights and entitlement to the ksuva. His claim is obviously trying to remove the ksuva from her. Rabbi Elazar and Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Yehoshua says he's believed. And so now let's see if we can understand what's behind each claim and the strength of each claim. And the Gemara, as the Kedarka Bekodesh in its usual manner, does not discuss the matter straight out, but we're going to go in a little bit of a circuitous route to get to the point of understanding each position.
Just to clarify, his claim is that she had a relationship after Erusin, before Erusin.
And she should have disclosed it.
Why would she lose her ketubah? I mean, you already learned that
that she was going to lose her ketubah, but that's information she needs to disclose.
She money, right?
That was a debate. And in fact, we're going to see that later this morning as well. That what happens if she doesn't disclose that information, either it's mekachtal, she goes down to zero, or the other option, which we're going to see later on, is that she's going to go from 200 down to 100. Either way, that's information she needed to disclose. She didn't. And so his position is, you should have told me. That was before Erusin. Okay. So, Hanosei, sorry. Itmar, mana libya dechvala, mani odeya. So again, we're not going to explain the Mishnah straight out. We're going to go in a slightly circuitous route, and the path is going to take us down the following case. The case is where a man says to another man, mana libya decha. It's a very simple case. So I go over to Phil and I say to Phil, okay, you owe me money. I'm sure of it. I lent you money, you owe me money. And let's leave documentation out of the discussion, because if I have a note, so then that's going to be pretty strong. But let's leave it out of the discussion. Phil's response is, I don't know. Any odeya, could be. You may be right, I don't remember. Okay, I know it would be funny if I said misremember, but let's leave current events out of it. But I just don't know. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, Amre Chayev. So Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda say that he's Chayev. He has to pay me, even though he's not agreeing, he's not admitting, and he just simply doesn't know. My position is that no, he for sure owes me. Good. So Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda say he's obligated. And Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan, Ami Potter, and Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda say that he's Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan say that he's exempt. And now let's understand this machlokus. And after understanding this machlokus, we're then going to translate it back to our Mishnah. Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, Ami Chaya, Bar Vishema, Bar Yadav. Look, for Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda's standpoint, let's look at the two tainas. I have a claim. Phil has a claim. My claim is he owes me money. I'm confident. I say it with passion. I'm sure. That's what's called bari. I'm sure. Phil says back to me, I don't know. Meaning as opposed to denying the claim and saying he doesn't know, he just simply says, I don't know. That's a claim that is shema. Meaning he's not saying yes, he's not saying no. He simply doesn't know. So when you have a claim and a counterclaim, one claim is a bari, it's definitive, with absolute certainty, I know the following happened. And the other claim, the counterclaim, is a shema. Maybe yes, maybe no, I simply don't know. So intuitively, we all understand what wins what. So the bari is going to beat the shema. So from Rav Hun and Rav Yehuda's perspective, that's going to be the case over here. Now, but it is a chiddush, as we're going to see in a moment, it's a tremendous chiddush. I'm extracting money from Phil. It's not just that we believe me over him, which who wouldn't agree to that point? Of course we're going to believe me over him. But we're going to believe me over him to the extent now where I'm going to go to his house and I'm going to take money away from him. Based on the fact that we're going to believe me over him. That money that's sitting in his house, he owns that money. And what principle, you give away the answer. And what principle do we say that he owns that money? Using the principle of chazakah. And when you take money away from somebody, what do you normally need? You need proof. You need evidence. You need hamotzi mechaver al avaraya. You need a burden of proof. So understand that Rav Hun and Rav Yehuda is allowing me to take money away from Phil. Even though he's a muchzak on that money, he's owning that money. In halacha, ownership is not 9/10 of the law, it's 10/10 of the law. Ownership is everything. And my claim of, you owe me money, and his counterclaim of, maybe, yes, maybe, I don't know, and that allows me to take money away from him, that's a tremendous chiddush. But that's the opinion of Rav Hun and Rav Yehuda. On the other side, just give me a moment. Let me just present both sides. Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan, Amri Potter. Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan say no. He's not going to pay him the money. And why not? Because he's a mochzak. He's the owner of that money. So my claim of, hey, you owe me the money, even though he's not agreeing, he's not denying, he's simply saying, I don't know. But my claim standing by itself is not going to be enough to take him away from his money and strip him away from his money. Just give me one more moment. Okay, that's the machlokus between the two of them regarding the case of Mani Libi Adecha. Now, I know that, but that's not what we're talking about in our Mishnah, but the Gemara is going to try to translate that in just a moment. Just one short parenthetical note, which is Rashi says that even within the position of Rav Yochanan and Rav Nachman, who says that but still Phil's going to need to make a shvua. And Ben, this addresses a point that you raised earlier. Phil's still going to need to make a shvua. It's what's called a shvua asset. When somebody comes to you and makes a claim that you owe money, and you essentially deny owing the money, so there's a rabbinic oath that needs to be made. It's what's called shvua asset. So Rashi points out that Phil's going to have to make a shvua, but okay. And it's not a minor point. Rashi points out that the shvua is going to be necessary over here. Okay, and now what the Gemara is going to do is, now after presenting the two sides of that machlokus, in the case of Mani Libi Adecha, now we're going to bring it back to our discussion over here. So, yeah.
The man is not just demanding money. I should have money, but say to him, when did you give him the money? So, if they keep asking these questions, and the other party, if he keeps saying, I don't know,
right. So again, so you're favoring the position of Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna, meaning the Bari V'Shema argument. That's very good. And the counter argument to that would be Chazaka, meaning great. It is suspicious that he doesn't know. I'm in agreement. It's suspicious.
He's saying I gave you money one day as we and all that.
Okay, good. So again, it's suspicious. But when all said and done, I don't have documentation. I don't have any hard proof. All I'm doing is making a claim. You're right. His counterclaim, it would have been nicer had he said no, or it would have been nicer had he said I already paid you. But all I have right now is a claim.
That's why they say they believe him.
Okay. So again, so this goes back to the basic issue of, it's a claim, it's a counterclaim, and we're trying to weigh now which one's more powerful. Is a bari more powerful over the Shema, or is the Chazaka more powerful? Now let's come full circle, now let's bring it back to our case over here. So, okay, Mamun Bechasas Mari, Amale Abai Rav Yosef, Had Rav Huna Rav Yehuda, Dishmolhi, this position Rav Huna Rav Yehuda. Again, Rav Huna Rav Yehuda are arguing that Bari is more powerful than Shema, and Bari is able to extract money from a Shema. So the Gemara says, this is really fundamentally Shmuel's position. So, let's say a woman is pregnant, and she's not married, and we're asking her a very simple question. Who's dead? Right? Well, who's, can you identify? Some Ishpani for Kohen. And her response is, yeah, he's so and so, and he's a Kohen. And the word Kohen over here doesn't necessarily mean that the father was a Kohen. Sure. It just simply means, right, he was a nice young Jewish man. Now, I don't know how nice he was, having impregnated a woman and not being married to her. But that's, again, the point is that. That's her claim. Rabbi Gamaliel, Rabbi Lazar, Omrim, Ne'emenes. Rabbi Gamaliel, Rabbi Lazar, sticking to party line, says she's believed. V'am, Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol, Halacha, Rabbi Gamaliel. And Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol says that the halacha, in fact, follows like Rabbi Gamaliel. V'am, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Shinan, Amar, Lam, Mishmol, Dishmol, Halacha, Rabbi Gamaliel, Apri, Shona. So, and not only is the halacha like Rabbi Gamaliel in that case, but Rabbi Gamaliel's, the halacha is like Rabbi Gamaliel, even in the first case, my Apri, Shona. What does that mean, even in the first case? Alpha, Gav, the Eagle, Amen. Because look, we're talking about identifying who the father is. But let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, it's more than just establishing who the father is. Our Mishnah is talking about money. Where does the money go? Does the money go from him to her? Does the money stay with him? Ksuva. And meanwhile, the halacha follows like Rami Gamaliel says Shmuel. So Amar, so deikla meimar uka mamon becheskas mare. So Amar Rami Gamaliel bari adif. So still, the Rami Gamaliel in our Mishnah is saying what? Her claim is Misha Arastani Ne'anasti. I was violated after the Arison. What do we file her category? Her claim under? It's bari. Mm-hmm. It's her body. She knows. She's saying with absolute certainty, this is what happened. He has a counterclaim. He doesn't know. In other words, he suspects, he thinks, but he doesn't know. His counterclaim is a Shema. So now when you look at the claim and counterclaim of our Mishnah, her claim is a Bari, his claim is a Shema, and what's going to happen according to Rami Gamaliel? According to Rami Gamaliel, he has to pay the Ksuva. So what do you see? That the Bari beats the Shema, even though it's extracting money away from him. So the fact that Shmuel is passing like Rami Gamaliel of our Mishnah seems to suggest, more than suggest, that he's favoring the arguments of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, that Bari V'Shema Bari Adif. Good. So,
and the other side,
In the case of money, he has to go and swear, but where can he go to swear this one?
No, he's not swearing. In other words, he's got to pay.
Money, he's going to say that I really don't know, right? He has to do it.
No. He's in our case, in other words, in our case in the Mishnah, her claim is you owe me the ksuva. Right. His claim is no such thing. I don't know. I'm not going
to
owe you ksuva. Her claim is based on an argument that to her is certain.
He knows when.
But in a money situation, when he says I don't know, he has to go to in front of three judges and swear. No,
not according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda says that his claim is believed because again, the principle of Bar V'Shema Bar Yadif.
But the other way, it's not a case of Musi Mechayev Alai because she has a ksuva. So it's not his money.
It's
different from the case of here. He has the money. Here right. She has a ksuba.
Right, but
it's the opposite. He should be the one.
But even though she does have a ksuba, but he's right now the holder of the money.
The ksuba.
I understand. This is where the discussion begins to get complicated. It's true. In this case, she does have a ksuba. It is a note.
But it's not a chazaka.
But at the same time, the note is seriously impugned by the fact that she was not a besula. And not only is she not a besula, but she didn't disclose that information. And now after the marriage, there's a discovery that she wasn't a besula, and they both agree that the facts are true. How did we arrive at this place? And now we have claim and counterclaim. And again, now we're going to go back.
It's not exactly the same.
I understand it's not exactly the same. All I'm doing is presenting the Gemara and explaining why the Gemara feels that's the same. So, I'm Rabbi Gamaliel. So, Lema Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Huna, Damakram and Gamaliel, Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Yochanan, Amakar, Rabbi Yeshua. So now here's what we're going to do. It's very simple. Now that we know the Manali Biyadecha case, and now we know the two basic positions over there, again, Rabbi Huna, Rabbi Yehuda maintain Bari Vishama Bari Adif. Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan argue the position of Chazaka, and now let's say that our Mishnah is basically working with the same operating principles. That in our case, meaning the woman is making the claim, they both agree she wasn't a Basula, and they both understand that this was not disclosed prior to the marriage. And now her claim is I was violated after I rescind. His claim is, no, I don't think so. I think you were violated before. Her claim is a bari. His claim is a shema. He's right now holding the money. So which one wins? So Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Gamliel seems to be siding with Rav Hun and Rav Yehuda based on the principle of bari shema bari adif. Rav Yehoshua, who supports him and defends him, seems to be operating with the principle of chazaka. This is how now the Gemara is going to present it as the machlokis of Rabbi Gamliel and Rav Yehoshua. Good. Now we've finally arrived at the point. The point now where we are analyzing and looking at why does Rabbi Gamliel side with her and why does Rabbi Yeshua side with him? The Gemara says, maybe not. So Rav Nachman says, don't do that to me. Do not pigeonhole me into the position around Gamliel. Because I can look come around Gamliel, some eladik amigo. Because over there, Rabbi Gamliel says that her claim is buttressed. What is it buttressed by? So she has amigo. Amigo means a statement that she could have made. Okay? Right, the word migo literally means since, and the operating principle of migo is as follows. I'm making a claim. I really can make a better claim. Okay, it's because I have the better claim that you're going to believe me on this particular claim. So that's the principle of migo. Now the avahacha. Now I'm sorry.
That's amigo.
Yeah. That's I know. I need to explain that. Okay, so here she can make a better claim. What exactly would have been a better claim? So Rashi explains. If you take a look at Rashi inside over here, Rashi writes, Ela de Ikamigo. Rashi, it's about halfway down in the Rashis. Kagon, Mishar Stani Nanasti Kagon, Hiomeres Mukadetsani. Okay, so right now what her claim is that she was violated and she was violated after Erisin. What could she have said? Now again, the facts on the ground is that she's not a Besula. That's the facts on the ground. She could have said to him, you know how I lost my besulim? It wasn't through a man. Mukadeitza had an accident. Damin amigo de abai taina taina mal yasa mehachke gon gabe meshar sani nanasti have a taina mukadeitza ani taina mal yasa. It's a better taina. Now here we go. Why is it a better taina? Rashi goes on to explain. De lo pasal nafshe mikahuna. It's a better taina because, as opposed to having been violated by a man, which again is a great taina in of itself, but she would be disqualified to marry a Kohen. If her husband was a Kohen, she couldn't be with her husband. Now, in our case, obviously, the husband was not a Kohen. But it is a weaker argument than that of Mukadeitz. Mukadeitz, if she says that it was just simply an accident and I lost my Dam Basulim through Mukadeitz, so that would allow her to be even with a Kohen. So it's a better argument. So the fact that she had another argument, a better argument behind the argument she's currently giving, means that it gives her credibility and she's telling the truth. Even if the case was Mukadeh, she still is bolstered by a better claim. Because instead of saying Mukadeh, she could have said Mukadeh, meaning it occurred now, she could have said Mukadeh, it happened actually even before we got, before Erisin. So she has a better claim than what she could have made. So again, her claim is supported by the fact that she had a better claim in the bullpen waiting, and so it gives more support to her current claim. And now, it's right. Let's go back to the first case. I'll address your question in the first place. This is not a classic migo, meaning that over here it is a better claim, but it's not a great claim. Generally speaking, when we talk about migo, what do we say? You could have said something that would have told you totally won the scenario, that would have won the case. And you instead opted to go with something which is not going to be as decisive for you, so you're going to be believed because sitting in the bullpen, you have something which is going to absolutely win it for you. That's generally speaking how Migo works. Okay. Over here, think about what Rashi says. Rashi says that what is she saying right now currently? I'm going back to the first case of Rashi. She's saying currently that I was violated while after Erisin. What could she have said Mukadeitz? Mukadeitz is not a. It's not.
You know,
huh? That's not the point. No. That again, that's not the point. Let's assume she knows. That's okay. Let's. That's aside from the point. let's say she says Mukadeitz Ani. That's not going to win her the case. Mukadeitz, according to the Chachamim, is still going to move her down from 200 down to 100. It's not going to be where she's now going to say, I have a perfectly legitimate entitlement to the full 200 ksuva. This Migo that we're presenting over here, that Rashi is presenting over here, is a little bit challenging to understand because it doesn't operate with the general principle of Migo. The general principle of Migo is that that claim that you could have made would have absolutely have been a decisive factor, and then that would have been, in other words, it would have been the winning argument. Over here, it's a better argument. It's not a winning argument. So this is not a classic Migo. What you could say over here in our case, and this is where it gets now slightly more complicated, but what you could say in our case over here is that even though the Gemara does say, you know, this is Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, we could side with Rav and Gamliel because you have a Migo. It's not just a Migo. It's a Migo coupled with Bar Vishama. Meaning, let's not lose sight of the fact of what's generally going on over here is that she's making a claim which is absolute. She knows for sure. He's making a counterclaim which he's just theorizing. He doesn't know for sure. Plus, right, it's Bari plus. Plus, she has a Migo. Now, again, it's not a classic Migo. But still, Migo plus a Bari, so that's going to tip it in her side. This is how Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda are going to argue that in our case over here, we generally don't buy into Bari Vishema. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda will tell you. But in this case over here, you have Bari of her, plus you have a Migu. It's not the best, but it's still a Migu. So you put those two together, we're going to side with her. Good.
But doesn't a Migu discredit the Bari? Because if he had a better choice, so how could that be for sure?
In general, that's true by Migu. Meaning, if you had the better claim, why are you making this claim?
Right.
That's always.
I understand that, but it's not a Bari.
Right.
It's not to do with Bari Shema. You have a better claim. But once you say Bari.
Good. Understood. But it is a principle. We see it again and again. This idea of Migu, the Gemara over here is using it, employing it as well. Okay. Aval Hacha, my Migu Ika. But over here, in the case of Manali Biadecha, where I go over to Phil and I say to Phil, okay, no, you owe me money. Now, he doesn't have a Migo, meaning right now he's saying, I don't know. Now, if he actually owes me the money, he'll say yes. If he doesn't owe me the money, he'll say no. But there's no Migo. There's no quote-unquote better claim he could have made.
I don't know you. Is that a better claim? I don't know you.
You're still going to have to make a Shavuos Esses.
Yeah, right, but it's still a better claim than
it's not better. It's more or less the same. It's the same claim. The I don't know and the I don't know, you're essentially the same claim.
I know for sure, and I know for sure, so I have to swear.
Okay, fine, but it's going to come, the result is going to be the same. Right. If the result is going to be the same.
It's not going to be bothering.
So, if the results are going to be the same, it's not a better claim. So the better claim means that if I'm going to say this, the result is going to be, right, mm-hmm. Correct. So, let me go back. So, or you could also make the following point. Meaning, when it comes to the woman, Rabbi Gamliel says we're going to believe her. Yes, we're going to believe her. Of course we're going to believe her. Do you know why? Because it's true that the man has a chazaka's mama. She also has a chazaka. We haven't discussed this yet, but let's point it out right now. What is she claiming? She's claiming, I was a basula when we got married. After the marriage, unfortunately, meaning after Erusin, so I was violated. But prior to that point in time, meaning when she comes into this world, she comes into this world as a basula. And that is a status. And when do we assume statuses change? Generally speaking, right? We're very conservative people. I'm not speaking politics. We're very conservative people. We assume statuses, generally speaking, don't change. So over here, if she came into this world as a basula, and her argument is, I continue to be a basula up into and through our erusin, that's also a chazaka. So that's why Rabbi Gamliel says we're going to believe her, because she has a chazaka sagof. So, I'm sorry. But in the case of, I claim to Phil, hey, you owe me money, he says, I don't know. Well, the only chazaka there to talk about is, right now, he's holding the money. After that point in time, there's no other chazaka to talk about. Okay, so the cases are, in fact, different. Wait, too early to ask that question. So hachanami mistabra kedemish. I'm sorry. Elava ava hachamai chazak isli lahai. Hachanami mistabra kedemishin and the Rav Nachman who the amar karam gamliel. So the Gemara points out, you know what? What we just pointed out, meaning the basic differences between the case of our Mishnah, her claim against his claim, the fact that Rav Gamliel says we believe her. And the difference between that and the case of Manel B'Yadech, where I go over to Phil and I say, you owe me money. He says, I don't know. Those are very good differences. Meaning those are correct differences. The Elo, I'm sorry, the Rav Nachman, the Damakar and Gamliel. The Imkein Kashe Hilchasa. Look at the top of now Yud Gimel Mem Aleph. The Gemara says, because if you don't make these distinctions, we're going to have a difficulty. The Kaimalan Hilchasa Karav Nachman Medine. Because we know that whenever you have civil law and monetary law, the Halacha falls like Rav Nachman, which means in the case of Manel B'Yadecha, I go over to Phil and I say, you owe me money. He comes back and he says, I don't know. We follow the halacha like Rav Nachman. What does that mean? It means that chazaka. Right. Rav Nachman's viewpoint. Right. Rav Nachman's viewpoint is chazaka, which means, Phil, you're not going to pay me. My claim of you owing me money is not going to be enough to extract money out of you, so you're not going to owe me. We follow the halacha like Rav Nachman. Hil chazaka Rav Nachman bedine. Uveha amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel halacha Rav Gamliel. And meanwhile, we know that in the case of our Mishnah, the halacha falls like Rav Gamliel, which means that we believe her. So elalav shmamina kidemishani shmamina. So isn't that puzzling? Isn't that confusing? So the Gemara is now saying it's not. We're going to have to draw out those basic distinctions. Again, let's go over the two distinctions. Number one, in the case of our Mishnah, where she says, Mishar Stani Nanasti, I was violated after Erusin. She's going to be believed because, number one, she not only has a claim of certainty against the claim of uncertainty where the husband's claim, the counterclaim is, but on top of that, she has a migu. She could have made a better claim. Now again, that we discussed already, how much better is it? But in our case, it is it's slightly better. So on that, she has a migu, so it's supporting her bari claim. Two is that it's true the husband has a chazak of money, but she has a chazak of cheskas agof. She came into the world as a basula. That status remains until otherwise known. The point of discovery that she wasn't a basula was after the first night together with her husband. So when did that change? Again, we don't know. But if you work with chazaka tells us that it only changed in the most recent history, which means that her claim of Misha Arastani and Nanasti is in fact supported by her Cheskas Aguf. Okay. Let's go.
Right.
Yeah.
I
Good.
Would you believe that?
I understand. That's the question.
Okay.
Good. So now there are two sides to this. Okay. Good. I see. You have a particular. You like a particular side over another. That's fine.
If I were in charge, he says, I don't know. He's
good.
So
it's fine. So, good, I get it. But in the Gemara, it's a machlokas, and the Gemara seems to favor, not seems. The Gemara goes like Rav Nachman, the Chazaka. Chazaka is going to be the end-all, be-all arbiter of this discussion. Okay. He omeris, we're out to the next Mishnah. He omeris mukas eitzani v'hu omer lo ki ela drusas ishat. Okay, so here we go now. More claim, counterclaim. So she says, mukadeis. Look, we're all in agreement. I didn't have my besulim. I should have told you. I didn't tell you. But okay, let's go over what happened. She says it was an accident. It wasn't a man. It was an accident. Mukadeitz. And his claim is, no, Kiela Drusas Ishat. And his claim is, no, it was a man. And so once again, who do we believe? So as I point out, everything over here is going to go like party lines.
I already know.
Huh?
I already know.
Exactly. No, you're correct. It's called Bari Veshema. How would he know? So he omers mukadeitz ani v'hu omer lo ki ela drusas ishat. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar mem nemenes. So again, Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Yoshua omer lo mipianu chayin ala hariz becheskas drusas ishat. I'm sorry. Ad shetavi ra'elis vareha. And his position is, I'm sorry. Rabbi Yoshua's position is, no, we don't believe her. We believe him. Again, you're going to see this consistently throughout our discussion.
Becheskas drusas ishat. That's a chazaka.
No, but again, it's you're right. But it's just the idea that we side with him over her. That's again the Rav Yeshua's position. Ta'anasaihu b'mai. Ask the Gemara. What is? In other words, we know what they're saying, but let's put a dollar.
Money.
Right. Correct. Let's put a dollar amount behind each claim. What is right? Because generally speaking, like we right. Let's let's be economists over here. What do we? Good. We know what the it's a passion. These are passionate arguments. But let's put dollar figures to each one of these arguments. So Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rabbi Masai Mamana. Rabbi Yochanan says the dollar amounts that we're putting behind each one of these claims is 200 and 100. Her claim of Mukadates is saying that I'm still entitled to a full ksuva of 200, meaning I am a besula. I know I don't have besulim, right? We made that distinction the other day, but I'm a besula. I was not with a man. And I know I didn't disclose that information, but like we discussed yesterday, very good. I know I didn't disclose that information. But Mukadates, even if it's not disclosed, remember yesterday's Gemara. The conclusion of the Gemara yesterday was that's not going to offend the ksuva amount. A non-disclosure of Mukadates is not going to affect her ksuva. Now again, that's not agreed to by everybody. But that's her claim. His counterclaim is, no, you were with a man. And his counterclaim is, let's put a dollar figure on his counterclaim, 100. In other words, you were not a basula. Okay, again, he's not saying that it was during Erison. If it was during Erison, so then that's Isser. He's just simply saying it was with a man, and so therefore, you didn't tell me this, goes from 200 down to 100. Now, if you remember yesterday's daf, you should be curious right now. 200 down to 100, wait a second. We said in yesterday's daf, if she didn't disclose that information, that's what's called mekach taos. She's going to forfeit her entire ksuva. And of course, a revocation of the marriage. But and that's not a small detail. I don't mean to like mutter that under my breath. But in other words, in terms of dollar figure, that should be zero. But as we're going to see in just a moment, Rav Yochanan sides with the viewpoint that if she was with a man, she didn't disclose that information, goes from 200 down to 100. That's Rav Yochanan's view of her claim versus his claim. So a value for her claim is 200. A value to his claim is 100. So what they're arguing about is 100. Hundreds of Rabbi Lazar, Omer Bama Nevelo Klum. Rabbi Lazar says, no, her claim entitles her to 100. His claim entitles her to nothing. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Mesayim, Amana, Sevelech, Rameir. So now the Gemara just simply spells everything out. What's Rabbi Yochanan? What's behind Rabbi Yochanan's opinion? Number one, he sides with Rabbi Meir. The Amar Bein Hikar Ba, Bein Lo Hikar Ba, Mesayim. Where, when it comes to Mukadates, whether the information was or was not disclosed, she gets a ksuv of 200. Fine. So, she's saying after the first night of the marriage, look, sorry I didn't tell you. I wasn't Mukadates, but going like Rav Meir, I'm going with 200. I'm arguing that I'm still entitled to 200, even though I didn't disclose that information. Rabbi Lazar, I'm Rabbi Manavalo Klam, Servalaka Rabban and Dami, Bein Hikarba, Bein Lo Hikarba, Manem. And what's Rabbi Lazar's position? He holds like the Chachamim, that Mukadates is only entitled to 100, not 200. Her claim is that she's entitled to 100. Even though she didn't disclose that information, she's still entitled to 100. And again, that was the Gemara's conclusion from yesterday. What's his counterclaim? Zero. Meaning, his counterclaim is, it wasn't Mukadates, it was a man. And you didn't tell me that information, it's a Mekach Taos, we go down to zero. Good. Bishlam al Rabbi Lazar lo kamer k'Rav Yochanan dekamuka l'k'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar's position is so easy to defend. Because, how is he explaining our Mishnah? Like the Chachamim, like the majority viewpoint, not like Rav Meir. That's wonderful. That's normally, generally speaking, how we like to explain things, going with the halachically normative position. But Rav Yochanan, my tamalo amak Rabbi Lazar. But it's certainly strange that Rav Yochanan is going to explain our mission going like Rav Meir. Rav Meir is a das yachid. Why would he do that? So kasavah kansa bechasav b'stul of anim says beula yeshlok suvamane. It happens to be that Rav Yochanan is of the viewpoint that if you married a woman, assuming that she was not a besula, sorry. Assuming that she was a basula, turns out that she wasn't. Turns out that it was a man, that she was violated by another man. I don't mean violated in the sense that she was raped. I mean that she was with another man. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that her ksuva gets dropped down to 100. Not like what we said yesterday. In yesterday's daf, we said that that's mekach taos and it goes down to zero. Rav Yochanan happens to be of the viewpoint that it goes from 200 down to 100. So, hachu kamar mana vi kamar mana. So now let's try to think about this. So based on that viewpoint of Rav Yochanan, how are you going to explain our Mishnah? her claim is 100, and then his counterclaim is, well, according to Rav Yochanan, his counterclaim is 100. Meaning, they may be arguing over the facts, but in terms of money, right? They're saying the same thing. That can't be. Mike may tani didei la tani dida. So that's why Rav Yochanan has to start at 200, so that we understand the claim and counterclaim. Her claim is 200 mukadates. His counterclaim is no bulas ish. No, you were with a man, bringing her down to 100. That's the reason why Rav Yochanan has to have our Mishnah starting at 200, so that it can go down to 100. Bishlam the Rav Elazar Haina Diktani Tarte. The Gemara points out, according to Rav Elazar, I understand the need for two Mishnayos, Chadal Afugim Midrami Barchama V'Chadal Afugim Midravchia Baravin, because one Mishnah is telling us that we don't subscribe to Rami Barchami. Remember yesterday's daf. He was the one who says that if there was no disclosure, that's it. Even on Mukad Eitz, it's Mekach Taos. And one, to preclude ourselves from the opinion of Rav Chiya Bar Avin. But Rav Chiya Bar Avin, I'm Rav Sheshas. Ella, Rav Yochanan, Tarti Lamali. But according to Rav Yochanan, why do I have two Mishnayos, which essentially is teaching me the same point? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why I need both Mishnayos. Because each Mishnah is accentuating the one of the Tanaim's positions. Because look at the first Mishnah, meaning the first Mishnah that we did earlier this morning. The first Mishnah where she says, I was violated after Erisin. He says, no, you were violated before Erisin. There, she had a migu. She could have said, she didn't even have to bring a man into the picture. She could have just simply said mukadates. And still, even though she has a migu that could be coupled with her, with a certain argument, Rav Yehoshua says, I still don't believe her. So to accentuate the viewpoint of Rav Yehoshua, I have that Mishnah. Our Mishnah, Gemara goes on to say, Rabbi Gamliel, in our Mishnah, she's saying Mukadates. Can she make a better claim than Mukadates? Quite frankly, no. That's the best claim she could have made. And yet, Rabbi Gamliel says, we believe her. So in our Mishnah, all she has is a claim with no better claim sitting behind it. And yet Rabbi Gamliel says, we believe her. That's why we have our Mishnah. So according to Rav Yochanan, you're right. From the standpoint of, I need two Mishnayos, even though we're essentially going over the same point, you're right, we're going over the same point. But each Mishnah accentuates how strongly Rav Yehoshua says, we don't believe her, and how strongly Rabbi Gamliel says, we do believe her, and that's why there's a need for the two Mishnayos. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with the new Mishnah.